Good afternoon and welcome to the Georgia Show. I'm Bill Quinn. Todd Wood is on assignment this afternoon and traveling, and he will have some exciting reports for everyone tomorrow on his show, The Skiff, at 10 a.m. till noon tomorrow. So today, one, thank you for being here, and we appreciate all the support we're seeing. We've seen just a ton of feedback, some great leads, some great stories that are coming out of folks that I think in the past might have been hesitant, perhaps, to bring some of this forward. And you guys are doing a wonderful job, and we appreciate that. If you can, and if you have the means, continue, please, to try to support us through our no-ad subscriptions. You can go to the front page of any of our digital papers across the country, including the Georgia Record, georgiarecord.com, and click on the no-ad subscription and subscribe there. It's $10 a month or $100 for the year and gets rid of the pesky ads. We need those only so that we can have the resources necessary to bring you the best news, quickest news that we possibly can. And we appreciate all the support there. We're going to talk about a number of things today. We're going to start with a number of the movements surrounding the Trump's decision to go back and attack Iran. And we're going to look not just at the attacks themselves, but the response to those and some of the potentials as we go forward, because we think all of that bears into a broader understanding of what's really going on with regard to Iran. We'll talk about some candidates in Georgia. We'll talk about some shenanigans, I'll call it, in Georgia as the campaigns get ready to kick off. We'll talk about some laws that are in play, some bills that are in play to create new laws. And we'll ask some questions about where those are and more. So before we get going, let me hear from David Cross, one of our great supporters.
I'm David Cross, and you may know me from my election integrity work, but I also own U.S. Asset Management, an investment advisory practice. I've been an advisor for nearly 30 years, and one of the questions I get asked most frequently is, do I have enough money relative to other people my age? And while that's an interesting question, it's also the wrong question. The right question is do you have enough money to sustain your lifestyle for the rest of your life? This is a question you should know the answer to. This is what we do. Check us out at us-am.com and look for our big, proud American Eagle logo.
I'm a naturopathic doctor. We are in the world of medicine, very acquainted with many modalities, but probably the one most familiar with everybody would be two things: homeopathy and herbals or herbs, maybe some nutrients too, you know, vitamins, minerals, that kind of thing. Now, we do know a lot about the drugs because we have to find out what drug you're taking affects you and what nutrient it depletes you of, because most every drug pharmacy product will deplete something. So we have been trained, and we have a database that we can check into that says this is going to take your B12 away. The pharmaceutical company cannot patent organic substances made by the body. You're not born short of Advil. You know, you're not born short of Ritalin. Yeah. You can be born short of insulin, right? Mm-hmm. The answers to staying healthy and keeping away from even SARS or any of those things getting into you is staying healthy. Mm-hmm. You and I get sick because our terrain gets out of balance. Well, that's the same thing in the soil. You and I are made from this thing called dirt. And when we get out of balance, we have the same thing happen. Weeds start to grow in our body. Right? And that's what we want in our body. We want nutrients that we don't understand how to get well enough yet, because our suppliers are lacking knowledge and nutrient density foods.
So this is what drove you to develop this, was your knowledge of this, right?
Right. You know that.
Okay, welcome back. So let's start with what Trump said the morning following the initial bombings on Iran. And we'll hear his comments. Listen very carefully. As we've said in the past, often if you listen very closely to what Trump says, you'll have a much better understanding of what's really going on. I don't think he spares a word of truth in the things that he says, and we need to listen very carefully. So here he is, and we're going to listen to his comments as posted by the White House the morning after the bombings that began this week on Iran.
Time ago, the United States military began major combat operations in Iran. Our objective is to defend the American people by eliminating imminent threats from the Iranian regime, a vicious group of very hard, terrible people. Its menacing activities directly endanger the United States, our troops, our bases overseas, and our allies throughout the world. For 47 years, the Iranian regime has chanted death to America and waged an unending campaign of bloodshed and mass murder, targeting the United States, our troops, and the innocent people in many, many countries. Among the regime's very first acts was to back a violent takeover of the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, holding dozens of American hostages for 444 days. In 1983, Iran's proxies carried out the Marine barracks bombing in Beirut that killed 241 American military personnel. In 2000, they knew and were probably involved with the attack on the USS Cole. Many died. Iranian forces killed and maimed hundreds of American service members in Iraq. The regime's proxies have continued to launch countless attacks against American forces stationed in the Middle East in recent years, as well as U.S. naval and commercial vessels in international shipping lanes. It's been mass terror, and we're not going to put up with it any longer. From Lebanon to Yemen and Syria to Iraq, the regime has armed, trained, and funded terrorist militias that have soaked the earth with blood and guts. And it was Iran's proxy, Hamas, that launched the monstrous October 7th attacks on Israel, slaughtering more than 1,000 innocent people, including 46 Americans, while taking 12 of our citizens hostage. It was brutal, something like the world has never seen before. Iran is the world's number one state sponsor of terror, and just recently killed tens of thousands of its own citizens on the street as they protested. It has always been the policy of the United States, in particular my administration, that this terrorist regime can never have a nuclear weapon. I'll say it again, they can never have a nuclear weapon. That is why in Operation Midnight Hammer last June, we obliterated the regime's nuclear program at Fordo, Natanz, and Isfahan. After that attack, we warned them never to resume their malicious pursuit of nuclear weapons, and we sought repeatedly to make a deal. We tried. They wanted to do it. They didn't want to do it. Again, they wanted to do it. They didn't want to do it. They didn't know what was happening. They just wanted to practice evil. But Iran refused, just as it has for decades and decades. They rejected every opportunity to renounce their nuclear ambitions, and we can't take it anymore. Instead, they attempted to rebuild their nuclear program and to continue developing long-range missiles that can now threaten our very good friends and allies in Europe, our troops stationed overseas, and could soon reach the American homeland. Just imagine how emboldened this regime would be if they ever had and actually were armed with nuclear weapons as a means to deliver their message. For these reasons, the United States military is undertaking a massive and ongoing operation to prevent this very wicked, radical dictatorship from threatening America and our core national security interests. We are going to destroy their missiles and raise their missile industry to the ground. It will be totally, again, obliterated. We are going to annihilate their Navy. We are going to ensure that the region's terrorist proxies can no longer destabilize the region or the world and attack our forces and no longer use their IEDs or roadside bombs, as they are sometimes called, to so gravely wound and kill thousands and thousands of people, including many Americans. And we will ensure that Iran does not obtain a nuclear weapon. It's a very simple message. They will never have a nuclear weapon. This regime will soon learn that no one should challenge the strength and might of the United States Armed Forces. I built and rebuilt our military in my first administration, and there is no military on earth even close to its power, strength, or sophistication. My administration has taken every possible step to minimize the risk to U.S. personnel in the region. Even so, and I do not make this statement lightly, the Iranian regime seeks to kill. The lives of courageous American heroes may be lost, and we may have casualties. That often happens in war. But we're doing this not for now. We're doing this for the future, and it is a noble mission. We pray for every service member as they selflessly risk their lives to ensure that Americans and our children will never be threatened by a nuclear-armed Iran. We ask God to protect all of our heroes in harm's way, and we trust that, with his help, the men and women of the armed forces will prevail. We have the greatest in the world, and they will prevail. To the members of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard, the armed forces, and all of the police, I say tonight that you must lay down your weapons and have complete immunity, or, in the alternative, face certain death. So, lay down your arms. You will be treated fairly with total immunity, or you will face certain death. Finally, to the great, proud people of Iran, I say tonight that the hour of your freedom is at hand. Stay sheltered. Don't leave your home. It's very dangerous outside. Bombs will be dropping everywhere. When we are finished, take over your government. It will be yours to take. This will be probably your only chance for generations. For many years, you have asked for America's help, but you never got it. No president was willing to do what I am willing to do tonight. Now you have a president who is giving you what you want. So let's see how you respond. America is backing you with overwhelming strength and devastating force. Now is the time to seize control of your destiny and to unleash the prosperous and glorious future that is close within your reach. This is the moment for action. Do not let it pass. May God bless the brave men and women of America's armed forces. May God bless the United States of America. May God bless you all.
A very inspiring speech. Now, there were several pieces there that are very important. We're going to go through those as we look at some other video and so forth. Here is a picture of the folks monitoring what's going on with the military operations. The operation itself is called, by the way, Epic Fury. And you can see them monitoring what's going on. They aren't going to show us the classified parts of what they can see, but you can see folks watching carefully what's going on so they could see minute by minute what the progress was. On the ground in Iran, there's some film that's emerged. And I want you to pay attention not just to the initial reaction, but listen to, I believe it's a young lady, and her reaction as she realizes that Iran is being attacked and change is coming. Listen to this.
Boy, beto zadan. Boy. Beto zadan. Beto zadan. Boy. Boy.
I mean, you can hear excitement in this young lady's voice based on what she sees happening. What was the reaction around our country and around theirs? Well, here's a set of folks in, I believe, Washington, D.C., reacting to the news the following day. They seem excited and I guess you could call it thankful for what's going on. Now, recall that Todd Wood and his great contacts within Iran and from Iran have been reporting now for quite a long time that there is a large contingent in Iran that really wants freedom. They really don't want things any different than our people here in America do. They want their freedom back. They don't want to be under this terrible regime. And you're going to hear more about some of the things that the Iranian regime has been doing to their own people, some of which are really horrific. They've been, in many cases, taking folks that were protesting and they kill them. And they don't care whether they're female, male, young, old, doesn't make any difference. And so as we learn more, I think we're going to have to be sensitive to that and understand where these folks are coming from. The other thing that you'll recall is in many cases, Iran and the Ayatollah and other folks within the regime have claimed, oh my gosh, we're going to, you know, take down the great Satan, the American people, the country and so forth. And yet they don't ever seem to be able to come through. And that's happening again, even as we speak. Earlier today, I believe perhaps very early today, Iran reported that they had fired four missiles at one of our carriers, the USS Abraham Lincoln. And then in the last 3 hours, the U.S. Central Command brought out this. Iran's IRGC claims to have struck the USS Abraham Lincoln with ballistic missiles, period. Lie, period. The Lincoln was not hit. The missiles launched didn't even come close. The Lincoln continues to launch aircraft in support of CENTCOM's relentless campaign to defend the American people by eliminating threats from the Iranian regime. We have some film of some of those operations so you can get a sense of what's going on. Now, you're going to see both aircraft taking off. We're not sure if this is the Abraham Lincoln or one of the other aircraft carriers that's in the area. You will also see missiles being launched from the ship, and those we believe are Tomahawk missiles, but it is fascinating to watch. Let's take a look. Wow, fascinating footage. So let's talk about the Iranian people again for a moment. You heard the president at the end of his speech say, "This is your moment," speaking directly to the Iranian people. "And it is your moment to take your country back." And indeed, when you start to uncover who the Iranian people really are and what they are looking to do, you find that the profile of many Iranians is much different than many people had guest up to now. They hadn't really done enough work to understand who these folks may be. So we wanted to talk about this. There are a number of posts now appearing which talk about the Iranian people being, a number of them certainly, being Christians. I don't think that many people understood that till now. Some did, certainly, but it's an emerging piece of data that people need to take to heart. Here is a post in a video that came up, and it's Iranian Christians singing Waymaker in Farsi, crying out to God for Iran. Let's take a look at the video. I think many people would be surprised by this, and yet we're seeing more and more reports of exactly this kind of thing. Here's another. 1 million Muslims in Iran have turned to Christ as 50,000 mosques close. And this is just one report. Now, are we looking at folks trying to portray something? Perhaps. I think in the coming days, we will learn more of what the real profile is. Is it this? Is it more? Is it something different? Well, we don't know exactly yet, but I think it's important that we get this on the radar so that people can understand. One of the reports talks about many Armenians having moved to Iran, and as reported by Todd Wood in past weeks and months, Armenia is indeed one of the very early Christian countries in that part of the world. And it does seem that some have been coming from Armenia and into Iran and now are causing the number of Christians to expand, to grow. Here's another example. The largest Christian group in Iran are ethnic Armenians and Assyrians who trace their roots to the early centuries of Christianity. They have state-recognized churches, but their freedoms are tightly restricted and evangelism is forbidden. And this posted by JD. You'll find more of this online. And we do want to make sure that people understand what we are fighting there is the regime that has caused such terrible changes in the Iranian people since that regime took over. And as we learn more about what that means, I think we'll understand better who the Iranian people really are and what they want. Here is a video that was posted that gives a sense of what Iran might have been like a number of years ago prior to this Ayatollah-based regime that's been threatening us and much of the world for now 40 years. We'll be right back. So for those who haven't seen these things before, Iran was not always a country of suppression of especially women, and the notion that they needed to be antagonistic and support terror in other countries to pull themselves along. And so, again, one of the things I think we're going to see is the number of both mature and younger people in Iran that want something different and are willing now to step in and hopefully be able to take charge. So as we look at that, you know, there are folks that will say, well, you know, that it wasn't perfect then either. Well, nothing really is it? But is it better than, you know, a state that's sponsoring terrorism in a number of other countries and making threats and so forth? Perhaps so. One of the questions that is on the table now is what are the implications as Iran threatens to fight back in some way, the remaining regime, which Trump has asked to lay down their arms and they will be given immunity, especially the Republican Guard. What will happen now, and what are the implications on the international scene, including economic ones? Well, one of the things that has been bandied about over the last 24 hours is, well, what the heck is going to happen to the price of oil? Well, let's take a look at something and keep things in perspective if we can. Here are the latest oil production figures from around the globe. Look who's at the top. The number of barrels per day from the United States is 13 million and change, moving toward 14 million. Saudi Arabia is second, followed closely by Russia, Canada, China, Iraq. Then we go down to Brazil. Then we go to the UAE. And all of a sudden, way down there at number nine is Iran with 3 million barrels. So if folks are espousing that, oh, gosh, if Iran's oil gets impacted in some way, it's going to have a devastating effect on the entire world economy. Will it have an effect? Yes, it probably would. But we need to keep it in perspective as to who is producing the most oil in the world at the moment, and it's the United States. The other thing that needs to be considered is the Strait of Hormuz does carry a lot of the world's supply of oil. I don't have the statistics in front of me this afternoon, but it is a non-trivial issue. If something were to happen that causes that strait to be closed, whether it be conflict or whether it be ships or something else, that would have negative effect on global oil supply and cost. And so is it likely to go up? Yeah, it probably might if that were to happen. How much? Nobody knows, but it could be significant. So we're going to keep our eyes on that. Let's see. Let's go ahead. We're going to take a break for a moment, come back, cover one or two other topics, and then we're anticipating a guest in this afternoon to talk about the continued elections fervor surrounding both existing legislation that's being considered, but also what's going on in Fulton County subsequent to the FBI raid there three weeks ago. Let's hear from one of our sponsors, and we'll be right back in a moment.
A warm welcome here at the National Press Club. Welcome to the journalists, welcome to the Embraer team, and welcome to the other guests that we have here. I'm going to announce, and as some of you guessed it right when they came in, the first E2 order by an American operator. And that operator is a fellow. We believe this is really a strategic shift to unlock profitability for the customer. I'm very pleased that we have Andrew Levy here as the CEO of Avelo, and I'm very pleased to give the stage to share a little bit more about what Avelo is going to do with the E2-195. Thank you very much.
Couldn't be more excited to be here as part of this historic announcement. We have such a great cultural fit as companies, so we're very, very excited to be Embraer's newest customer. We launched our airline in April of 21, and our target is focusing on small secondary airports of large metro areas. We've carried over 8 million customers since we started on 63,000 flights, and we've done all these things with 1,200 of the greatest crew members I could ever imagine having, and many of them are here with me today. This is the right airplane for us. It's going to open up opportunities for us that no other aircraft can serve. The best thing about the airplane, of course, is you will not find a middle seat on this airplane. It doesn't exist. We won't have any to offer. It's going to be the best cabin in the United States, and we're so excited about that. This is going to elevate our experience to the highest level, and we think our customers are absolutely going to love the airplane.
Well, in the case of hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, these are two medications that have been FDA approved for use in humans for decades. They are very, very inexpensive. Interestingly, available over the counter in almost every other country other than the US and Canada. You can just walk into a pharmacy and buy them like we buy Tylenol in much of the world because they're that safe. And we've known for decades that ivermectin has very strong antiviral properties. It has anti-inflammatory properties. And both ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine are what we call zinc ionophores. They help to move zinc from the bloodstream into the cell, which is where it needs to be in order to fight off a virus. So lots of application for these. And we have every reason to believe that those drugs also will likely have some efficacy against H5N1 or a number of other respiratory viruses that we may meet down the road.
Okay, welcome back again. All right, so one of the things we're going to talk about is the notion that not everybody who should be working on our behalf is indeed working on our behalf. I want to play something for you regarding the Save America Act and why it is potentially a litmus test in terms of who's actually working for us and who is potentially trying to work against us. Let me bring this up.
Freedom Caucus led in passing the Save America Act in the House to require voter ID and citizenship to vote in federal elections. Now it goes to the Senate. You're going to hear the excuse that it needs 60 votes to pass there, but that's not true. Senate rules allow bringing the Save America Act to the floor at any time. If 51 Republicans show up, Democrats would have to filibuster, standing and talking, hour after hour, to block it. As long as Republicans show a backbone and stay united, Democrats will eventually run out of time to talk. Tell your senator to make the Democrats actually debate instead of just giving in to them. The House Freedom Caucus says the Senate should support President Trump and the House in passing this law essential to saving America. The Freedom Caucus Foundation is responsible for this ad.
Okay. So in addition to that, we saw something that gives everybody a clue as to who is really trying to work for us and who isn't. Here is a post from Elon Musk, and he points out that Senator John Thune said there is no time to debate and vote on the SAVE Act. But they do have time, believe it or not, for a dog show in the Senate. And we're going to show you the short video of this. But if you want to know who's working on your behalf, all you have to do is see something like this.
You have been hanging around the Senate button. Come on in.
There he is.
You get the picture? And we're going to see some stuff like this, I think, here in Georgia as well. We're going to talk about that later in the show. All right. I'm going to welcome in our guest today, Jason Frazier. Jason, thank you for making time and being here, my friend.
Sure. Good seeing you, Bill.
You've continued to be just a busy guy when it comes to keeping the folks from Fulton on their heels and continuing to try to make progress both in the legislative ranks and so forth. So thank you for all of that. Let's start with there appears to be movement on the budget for the state election board is what I'm hearing. Can you share what you understand as we sit here today? We were concerned that they were cutting up to 40% of the SEB's budget. What's the latest that you're getting?
Yeah, I heard the same thing, Bill. The first draft of the budget showed slashing the State Board of Elections budget by, I think it was around 40%. It was about $500,000 they were cutting out, which would have made it very difficult for them to function effectively. And then recently, about a week ago, the Senate passed their version of the budget, which brought that $500,000 back in. And then I just heard, I think it was on Friday, that the House brought that back up to where it was to begin with. So essentially no cut, just continue moving forward as we had hoped. So that way the Board of Elections can continue to function more and more productively. And I guess for the folks that may not be as aware, what happened is the Secretary of State used to be over the State Board of Elections. They cut that separation and separated the two. And when you do that, you got to have a budget to run alone. And then it became very difficult for them to get cases investigated simply because they didn't have the budget to investigate their own cases. That has been improving. However, there's still quite a few cases that need to be investigated. And I mean, there's some other things like the State Board of Elections doesn't even have a website yet. So, you know, name me another branch of the government that doesn't even have a website, but that's, you know, one more thing that they need. So that way they can be fully independent, set up their own meetings and be productive.
Yeah. Well, once we have this confirmed, I will be acknowledging the work of those who got this done. If in fact they've gotten the budget back. We challenged this based on what we had heard was the leader of the House Appropriations Group that seemed to be allowing it to be cut. And so we challenged that along with many other people, including yourself. And hopefully that's been corrected. If it has, we will go ahead, do what we always do. We give a spanking to the ones who are hurting us, and we give a thank you to those who are helping us. And so we will continue to do that. What else are you picking up in terms of potential bills that may be helpful in whether they're moving forward or if they're not, who seems to be in the way? Are you able to pick any of that up?
You know, that's been difficult to ferret out this legislative session. There haven't been a whole lot of meetings on election integrity bills. I know tomorrow the Senate Ethics Committee is supposed to meet. So possibly at that hearing, last time I checked, there was no agenda for it, but that was on, I think it was on Saturday that I checked. So there may be an agenda now and possibly they'll discuss some bills there, but essentially they've been kind of slow rolling these bills. And I know some of that is strategy. So that way the left doesn't, start screaming Jim Crow 2.0 like they do on everything else. And so the legislature likes to delay the election integrity bills to the last minute, but we also saw last year what can happen when that occurs is we get hope that something will happen, and then the last day of the session, nothing passes, and you get zero election integrity bills. So I would prefer, you know, they're going to call us names anyway. They're going to say, you know, Jim Crow 2.0, no matter what happens, even if the turnout is higher after we pass a bill. But so I think we just need to pass bills, do small ones, get them across the finish line, show progress, and give our side hope that the legislature is actually listening instead of these Hail Mary bills that we hope pass on the last day of the session, which may or may not happen.
Yeah. There's been a lot of talk across social media, but also in circles that do seem to be connected to the administration, that there is a potential order being previewed, I think is the term they're using, which would cause essentially a national emergency with regard to elections, and that might form the basis of sweeping change to include things like voter ID, confirmed voter ID, confirmed citizenship, single day voting, paper ballots, hand counting, and more. If that were to move forward, and we're not sure if or when, what do you think the reaction in Georgia would be? Are people ready for that, or would they in some way be concerned? What do you think?
I think they'll make up a concern, and, you know, the grandstanding will occur again no matter what. At this point, I think it needs to happen. The strongest hope that I've got is that there will be an order from the top and say that we can't have, you know, voting machines that are black box voting machines that nobody knows what happens to your vote once it goes into that little box. You know, in Georgia, we have election laws, but I've never once seen anybody convicted of an elections crime going through the AG's office. So a law has no validity if it's never enforced. Mm-hmm. So I think coming from the federal government is probably our strongest hope. And as far as not being prepared, I mean, you know, there are a lot of people that can count to 10. I mean, I learned how watching Sesame Street when I was a young boy, you know, one cookie, two cookie, you know, we can all do that. So it's not rocket science. And I know one of the biggest things that that people like to push back on is, you know, oh no, Fulton County's too big to count, you know, count paper ballots. Well, you know, it's all scalable. A small county might have one precinct, Fulton County has a number of precincts. You just divide the massive number of votes by precincts, and it's the same number of votes to count by precinct. So it is not that difficult. And if you had one day elections and you got rid of the machines, I mean, for the folks that haven't worked the polls before, the polls, you get your team there very, very early simply to set up all of the machines. You get there several hours early because you've got to wheel them around, you've got to open them, you've got to document all the seals. It's a tremendous amount of work to get those machines set up. And then the closing is a lot of work to shut them down and document everything. If you just shaved off all the hours associated with machines at the precinct, as well as the transportation hours, LNA testing hours, hours moving them around, you are dramatically reducing the number of hours it takes. If you just got there, you know, if the polls open at 7, you show up at 6:55, you've got a stack of paper, you do the voting, and then at the end of the day, if polls close at 7, you just count a stack of paper. It's really not rocket science. So I think it's very much overblown, and they're making up excuses no different than, you know, disenfranchised minority groups don't know how to get a driver's license. I mean, it's nonsensical. And where I come from, if you say, you know, somebody of one group isn't smart enough to get a driver's license, I call that being racist. I think, you know, every group has the ability to get a state ID. So I think, you know, most groups know how to count to 10. And if they don't, then, you know, get a different person that can count to 10. But I think most Americans know how to count. So it's very much overblown, and we can do this here in Georgia.
Yeah. a few minutes ago, I was remarking on the reaction by Iranian folks that are here in the country, but also Iranian folks that are in Iran. And they, rather than what some would have you believe, that they're, oh my gosh, we're being attacked, this is terrible, they're in many cases cheering because they want freedom. They want a good chance at a good life with them and their family and safety and so forth. And I wonder if all that people have said about, oh, these would be terrible steps anywhere, but especially here in Georgia. And if we really found out what people want, I wonder if we wouldn't learn what many have theorized, which is everybody wants to know that their vote counts and that it's being counted accurately. And they want to have the things that are beginning, I think, maybe to emerge under this current administration. So it will be an interesting time. Again, we don't know what the timing might be and if or when something might happen, but it will be a fascinating, I'll call it, couple of months as we get through qualification and onward toward the primaries.
Right. And I think it would be great if this happened before the primary. I know time is getting short, but primaries, as we know, are much lower turnout elections. So that would be a great place to start testing it and practicing. I mean, some small cities have been counting their own ballots by hand for years. It is very doable. A lot of states do it. A lot of different countries do it. So we've got to do it. And like you said, it should be bipartisan, and I believe it very much is. It's just the handful of people that like to yell and scream, and we just can't listen to that nonsense and just do what the people want. We need transparency, Bill.
We do. And We're not getting it when we talk to the Fulton County commissioners, are we? They would prefer to run for their cars. Yeah, oh, who am I talking about? David Barrett, for one.
It sounds like a conspiracy theory, Bill.
Oh, gosh. You know, we're running out of those these days, I got to tell you.
Yeah.
All right. Any last thoughts for the folks, Jason?
You know, that's pretty much all I've got going on. I mean, just keep an eye out for these election integrity bills when they do drop, and, you know, read the bills. A lot of times a legislator might think a bill is written well, but if you read it in the eyes of how is Fulton County going to interpret this, how are they going to weasel around it, that's a different set of skills to look at those bills. And so, you know, if you live in one of these corrupt counties, you might be able to get some input saying you might want to word it just a little different because Fulton County is corrupt. So writing a bill for honest people and writing a bill for corruption are completely different things. But just keep an eye and work with your legislators.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you for that. Thank you for all the work again. We say it every time, but it's well deserved. You along with many across Georgia are doing just yeoman's work to try to push us toward a good place. So thank you for that.
All right. Thank you, Bill.
We will look forward to seeing you again soon, my friend. Thank you.
All right.
All right. Let's talk about candidates and some of the funny things going on. You know, we're going to try to go down the middle of the road for the moment, but we did have the opportunity to check a few things. And so we'll show what we find in checking some of the data that's being thrown around, especially around the gubernatorial candidates. So let's take a look at this. So Laura Loomer posted this, and she calls out the fact that Burt Jones, who is running for governor, obviously, apparently, according to her, invited a transgender person to serve as chaplain to the Georgia State Senate during this week. We would like to check and make sure who actually invited this person. It does seem to be, you know, perhaps a little out of expectation in what is known as Georgia is supposed to be a conservative state, and we would expect that that's fulfilled through the choices and the people with whom we associate based on those choices. This did raise some eyebrows. And so we would like to encourage the Jones campaign to talk about this openly. And we'll give them a chance as well. And I think it should be at least discussed, and perhaps the methodology, the theory behind, if in fact this was the invitation from Burt Jones, then what was the thinking behind it? That's piece one. Piece two is, here's a post that we did some work on because this person, AC Truth, claimed certain things around Rick Jackson, another, the emerged, if you will, candidate for governor, and who claims to be in the lead based on several of the polls. So we didn't have a chance to check everything, but we did check some. So let's go down and see what we looked for. This post says, Rick Jackson financially supported Jeff Duncan, a Democratic candidate for governor. Well, when we asked Grok to go research this for us, they found a number of articles and so forth. Then they came back, Grok came back and said, yes, Rick Jackson has provided funding to Jeff Duncan. Jackson helped bankroll Duncan's successful 2018 Republican campaign for Lieutenant Governor of Georgia, where he served from 2019 to 2023. Duncan is listed among the past beneficiaries of Jackson's political donations, along with other Georgia Republicans like Attorney General Chris Carr and Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger. I actually found that last one to be even more concerning, perhaps, than Jeff Duncan. We'll see more about this in a couple minutes. Let's go back to the list. This claims that he hired Byron Tyson as legal counsel. Tyson is also counsel for Brad Raffensperger again. Well, let's take a look at that. Yes, when we asked the question, is Byron Tyson connected to Rick Jackson and Brad Raffensperger? The answer was indeed yes. And that in and of itself is concerning in that, especially since Byron Tyson has been involved in some of Raffensperger's election-oriented cases and in ongoing defenses against claims of election irregularities. Well, most people in Georgia, and given the information that's coming out in these last weeks, have begun to see a foundational concern around Brad Raffensperger and the elections in Georgia, and it's not going away. So theoretically, anybody attached to that, including this Byron Tyson, would be concerning. And the fact that he's also attached in various ways to Rick Jackson and Jackson Healthcare maybe is cause for some concern. Let's go back to the next one. Nick Ayers, former chief of staff for Mike Pence. Well, we checked this one and we got a little bit different answer. Let's see, here it is. Nick Ayers doesn't work directly for Rick Jackson. He owns his own political strategist firm, but has been associated and has done work with Rick Jackson and the Jackson Acquisition Company too, a special purpose acquisition company, a particular term used when you create a company that's going to acquire other companies. So is this a relationship? It appears to be something of that, yes. Ayers and Jackson do have other connections, Grok comes back with. Both were investors in the now-defunct financial startup Glorify, along with figures like Vivek Ramaswamy and Peter Thiel. Peter Thiel has been named in a number of different things. I believe we've already seen his name crop up in some of the files that have been released recently. And so this could be an area of concern. What does it really mean? Well, again, it comes back to who do you associate yourself with? The other claim that we had looked at was that Jeb Bush sits on an advisory panel for Jackson Healthcare. And indeed, this shows that, in fact, he does. Now, Jeb Bush can be looked at in a number of different ways. President Trump used to call him, I believe, low energy Jeb, things like that. And there are concerns around Jeb Bush. And yes, he appears to be connected in ways that are, I'll call them meaningful, perhaps, for Jeb and Jackson Healthcare, certainly, and by then association, Rick Jackson. So here is from Transparency USA, and this goes all the way from 2017 to present, the contributions made by Jackson Healthcare to a number of candidates in Georgia. So you can see that they include Kemp, they include Cagle, they include Duncan, they include Chris Carr, Greg Dolezal, which is surprising in that he's a Senate senator in the state. Why would he be on this list? And Brad Raffensperger. Now, this still is only about $300,000. Is there more to still be exposed? Potentially. We don't know yet, but we'll keep on this. But notice who is not on the list. Burt Jones. Well, we will see as we learn more, and we will continue to pour through the data as we get into final qualifications and as we move into the actual campaign season. All right. Remember what we said a few minutes ago. How do you tell who is working on your behalf and who is not? So where is the HB 1089 ivermectin bill? Remember, we brought this up in past weeks. This would be simple to have approved. It's a half-page bill. It simply makes ivermectin available over the counter in Georgia, as it is already in many other states. And we'll probably see in other states in the coming weeks. They will pass additional bills that will allow ivermectin to be over the counter. Now, somebody sent back a note and said, well, this really isn't any big deal. You can buy it from national sources. You can buy it out of Tennessee. You can buy it in other ways. You could get it today. For me, that's not really the point. The point is, if our legislators have the chance to make this over-the-counter medication It's been around for 40 years. It's proven effective. It's proven safe. It does not preclude the use of other medications. Why wouldn't they make it available and easily available here in Georgia? Anything else seems to be working against the people of Georgia. And like we said, we're going to call out those that, you know, that seem to be in the way. So once again, Representative Lee Hawkins, Representative Trey Kelly, the chairman and co-chairman of the committee in which the 1089 bill still resides, according to a look in the Georgia General Assembly records in the last hour. Please get this moving along. We are approaching crossover day at the end of this week. It needs to be over to the Senate and passed through the House so that the Senate may consider it and hopefully pass it. Anything else, and we will simply continue to point the finger at why not. And right now, these two gentlemen are the why not. All right. We are going to call out one other thing that I would recommend you take a look at. David Clements has been a wonderful support for CDM and for the Georgia Record and other things. He's come on to share his guidance. He's been, again, a great election integrity advocate for now 5 years or more. He continues to turn out very interesting and thought-provoking videos on his The Professor's Record series. You can find it on his Substack. You can find it on X. You can find it on YouTube and other locations. He just published another one and would highly recommend that you consider taking a look at this in the coming days. It's between this and his other releases, they're very thought-provoking. They are not just the here and now, but they delve into what might be the meaning behind some of the very odd things that we're seeing in the world, especially with regard to the Epstein files being released and other things. I almost forgot one thing that I wanted to share before we close today. And that is, sometimes you can tell who people are, back to that theme again, by what they don't want to say. And in an appearance earlier this week, Clay Fuller, who is running against Colton Moore for the 14th District U.S. Congressional position, was people tried to ask him a couple of questions, and here was his response.
Wait. She has a question for you. She has a question. You're not going to ask them, let a question be asked? You're not allowed a question be asked? You guys kept Clay Moulton's people out of the...
Hey, Clay, the other day your staff told voters and Trump supporters they would be excluded from participating in President Trump's visit to the varsity because they weren't supporting you. Will you take the responsibility for that and correct it publicly?
Wow. That's supporting the Republican Party.
Conditioned on support for your personal campaign. Keep running.
Money.
Clay Fuller, running for office. You can't make this stuff up. What she was asking about was, and I had heard this through the grapevine too, some folks were told that they were not going to be able to get into certain of the events surrounding Rome, Georgia, when the president was there, if they were not a Clay Fuller supporter. That rally was not for one person. That was a rally held by President Trump. Gave a lot of credit to the steel company where the event was held and the other folks in line for various other reasons. But it was concerning and disappointing that apparently Clay Fuller supporters told people they were not allowed to attend certain things if they weren't supporting Clay. So we hope that that doesn't continue, but if it does, we'll continue to bring it to you. All right. Thank you for being with us. We'll be back on a Wednesday at 7 p.m. and sooner if we need to, if things are going on that you need to hear. Thank you again for being with us, and we'll see you then.
Thank you.